We call Commerce Committee to order. We have three bills on the agenda. We're going to do them in this order. Senate File 2462, Senator Franz's bill that deals with limousine regulations. And then we'll go to the omnibus liquor bill, which we had hours of hearings on the other day. And then we'll go to Senator Hayden's bill on the payday lending. So with that, Senator Franzen, welcome to the committee, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill, Senate File 2462, which will modify state limousine regulations. This bill is supported by the Minnesota Chauffeur Transportation Association, which is the trade group for the chauffeur transportation industry in Minnesota. Limousines are defined and regulated by the state of Minnesota, and for this discussion, it includes chauffeur transportations such as town cars, limos, chauffeured SUVs, etc. There are specific regulations and laws that apply to this industry, which are regulated and operated differently than taxis. The statutes regulating limousine operators and limousines themselves have not been updated in roughly two decades. A lot has changed, as you all know, since the 1980s and early 90s, and most notably, the vehicles themselves have changed. This bill addresses two main issues that the industry would like to see updated. First, it deletes references to what a limousine is or isn't and increases capacity from 13 passengers, including the driver, to 15 passengers, including the driver. This change is the first step to allow Minnesota's limousine operators to put limousine license plates on any luxury passenger automobile with capacity of up to 15 passengers, including the driver. Particularly, this would include the SUVs, which were not as prevalent as they 20 years ago as they are today. Second, this bill increases the insurance liability for limousine operators from $300,000 to $1.5 million. And we can all agree that health care costs in the last 20 years have gone up dramatically since the law was enacted 20 years ago. So this would put it back to par with the rest of the industry. And in the event a limousine driver were to hit a pedestrian or injure someone in a car, $300,000 of coverage and bodily injury doesn't go very far nowadays. Additionally, $1.5 million is the U.S. DOT standard minimum requirement. And presently, an SUV is regulated by U.S. DOT and requires $1.5 million in insurance. And a limousine-plated sedan is regulated by MnDOT and only requires $300,000 for liability insurance. $1.5 million is what the Metropolitan Airports Commission currently requires for limousine operators to drop off or pick up at the airport. So raising it to $1.5 million, again, standardizes the industry. With me today, I have Ms. Gina Brennan, president of the Minnesota Chauffeur Transportation Association and owner of Corporate Car and Coach, a chauffeur transportation business based here in St. Paul. And we'd be happy to answer any questions after her testimony.
Welcome to the Minnesota Senate, Ms. Brennan. Did you want to make a few remarks?
Sure. Just want to thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for taking time to speak with us today. Again, my name is Gina Brennan. I own and operate a chauffeur transportation company, Corporate Car and Coach. We're based right here in St. Paul with a branch in Rochester. I have a fleet of about 30 vehicles. I'm here today to represent the Minnesota Chauffeur Transportation Association. I am their current president. And we'd like to thank Senator Franzen for authoring our bill and all the other co-authors as well. So we're here to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions of the committee members or anybody in the audience wish to speak for or against this legislation? Senator Kosoka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Franzen, I'll say that the bill as is, I do support. I appreciate some of the work that's gone into it. Some of the fee schedule that was discussed I thought was the wrong approach, but I think having proper liability also has a cost to it or skin in the game, and so I support this.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Gazalka.
Senator Dames.
Thank you, Chair Metzen and Senator Franzen. Have you put any thought about, we have a $1.5 million limit, have you put any thought about a combination of a basic auto policy or commercial auto policy and an umbrella that would equal $1.5 million? In some cases, we have a lot of people who do that. They'll buy an underlying policy, and then they'll put an umbrella on top of that. Is there any thought been put into that combination?
Ms. Sabrina, did Mr. you wish to?
Mr. Chair and members, yes. There is folks that have that at a current approach right now. Some policies are written that way.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dames.
Follow-up. But the way this is written, I don't believe that that's going to qualify to meet these requirements.
Okay, cool.
Mr. Chair, Senator
Branson.
Dames, certainly we can look into and see if we can have to make an amendment, but I don't know if that was the intention to limit the ability to have those type of policies. It's just the required liability is 1.5. So we're just updating the number, not necessarily how you get there in terms of how your policy is designed. Does that make sense?
Follow-up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
Senator Dames.
I understand where you're coming from, but I don't believe this language is going to do it.
Mr.
Because
Chair.
Typically in an umbrella, you don't describe bodily injury. Typically an umbrella has overlying coverage, so that's where my concern is. I support the one. I don't have a problem with your limit. I'm not so sure we're not locking out some options.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I have with me Colin Sheehan, and he can also elaborate. He's been working with the coalition to get to this language, so maybe we'll be able to provide some more insight.
Mr. Sheehan, welcome to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Chair Metzen. Senator Dames, yeah, I think you're asking the language or the sentence that was deleted that had $100,000 for bodily injury. So you're asking that be put back in with possibly a higher cap?
Mr. Chair.
Which I think the association would be fine with if you wanted to amend that language.
I would just want to see that. I'd want to see the $1.5 million can be made up with a basic or a commercial auto policy and an umbrella,
okay,
to get to the $1.5. I think you're going to give people more options and still get, at the end of the day, still have the same coverage.
Okay.
We'll figure that out.
Mr. Chair?
I think so.
Senator Kosako.
Yeah. And Senator Dames, I absolutely agree with you that an umbrella, yeah, with an underlying policy that gets up to $1.5 million or more would be prudent. It often is cheaper, but I'm not sure that this doesn't do that. And I would say if we pass this and it doesn't, then if the author would take that as a friendly amendment on the floor, I think that would be a simple way to do it.
That be agreeable with you, Senator Franz, and I?
Mr. Chair, yes, and I'll certainly work with counsel to make sure that we have this intent behind this legislation if we have to make it clear that we have that language.
I think it's too much to do right now on the fly, so I think we'll take that as a we'll look at it. If need be, Senator Franson has agreed to amend it on the Minnesota Senate floor. Any further discussion? I think the co-authors are, I think, Senator Housley, you're one of the co-authors. Maybe you'd like to move the bill to the Senate
so
floor.
Moved. Okay,
on the Housley motion, all those in favor, let me say an aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
Welcome
members
to this committee. It's good to see you. I don't think you've been here before. All right. We're going to do that liquor bill, and we're not going to take testimony. We had, I don't know what it was, 2 or 3 hours the other day on it. But I think we'll have, I'm going to stay seated here, and we'll have the council go through the articles or the 17 or 18 things. Bills we put on this omnibus bill, and we've all heard it already, so that's agreeable, staff, senator, or council.
Mr. Chairman, members, I hope you have the A1 delete everything amendment to SF 2346 in your packet. That's the vehicle bill, and all the other bills we heard that are included in this delete all. I'll just go through it pretty rapidly.
Might refer to, excuse me, the summary's got it pretty well, I think, set that way, that plus the bill, but the summary's pretty well nicely done. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 1 are the alcohol excise tax exemptions. One of them came from the Saxhog bill about home brewing, and the other came from Senator Dahl's bill related to farm wineries. So I think this section will necessitate a quick trip to the Tax Committee, Mr. Chairman.
I'm aware of that. Thank
okay.
you.
Sections 2 and 3 are defined terms out of Senator Dahl's farm winery bill that are used later in the bill. Section 4 is the micro distilleries provision. This provision allows micro distilleries to get a cocktail room license to make on sales at their distillery of their own distilled spirits. I would point out to the committee that this is a little bit changed from as discussed when Senator Pappas presented the bill last week, in that this bill no longer would allow off sales of distilled spirits from the distillery, nor would it allow self-distribution by micro distilleries. It's basically a cocktail room only license.
So trimming it down from three provisions to the one at this time. So.
Section 5 of the bill is a Senator Reiner provision which allows tap rooms to be open and conduct on-sale business on Sundays without regard to whether they're a restaurant under law which requires food service. So that would not be required. A tap room could simply be open and conduct business like they do the rest of the days of the week. Section 6 is a conforming change to the Pappas bill. Section 7 deals with the growler issue. Two provisions here allows small brewers to make off sales of growlers on Sundays, and those sales have to be approved by the licensing jurisdiction, and the hours can be set by those jurisdictions. Also included in this section is the so-called growler refill provision. Section 8 is the same thing in Section 7 except for brew pubs. Brew pubs were inadvertently left out of the legislation the committee heard last week. Everybody agrees they should be treated at parity with other small brewers, so that's what Section 8 does. Section 9 is the Saxhog bill on being able to take home-based beer to contests without a problem under the statutes. Section 10 comes from the Dahl bill, and it is an increase in the production limit allowed for farm wineries from 50 to 75,000 gallons in a year. Section 11 is from the Dahl farm winery bill, allowing a farm winery to store wine or distilled spirits in a non-contiguous warehouse. Section 12 allows a farm winery, again from the Dahl bill, to source bulk wine or bulk distilled spirits from other than a wholesaler if a wholesaler can't provide it. Section 13 is the Benson Sacramento Wine Bill. Section 14 are two Hayden provisions, one kind of a recodification of the current license already allowed for the American Swedish Institute, and one a new license for the MIA. Section 15 is the Jensen Bill, which allows a couple things, no longer requiring a certain percentage of gross receipts coming from food to have that license, and it also lifts the cap on the percent of alcohol by volume that can be in the wines offered there. Section 16 is the provision from Senator Jensen's bill which allows pre-mixture of cocktails on site, subject to the specified conditions worked out with the Department of Public Safety on that. Section 17 is the Metzen bill, allowing a few more samplings of malt liquor at retailers every year. Section 18 is the Hoffman bill, local license for a wedding event center in Brooklyn Park. Section 19 is the Richfield Junior Hockey license. I think that was Senator Wicklund's bill. Section 20 is Senator Metzen's bill and the underlying vehicle bill, actually, for the bill, but allows the jurisdictions in Hennepin County to approve extended bar hours till 4 a.m. for the baseball All-Star game held in July. Section 21 is Senator Latt's bill, allowing a local license for the golf course and community center in Golden Valley. And Section 22 is Senator Dahl bill, which removes the sunset for alcohol service at TCF Bank Stadium. That's it.
Any questions? Senator Pappas, do you have an amendment?
I do have an amendment, Mr. Chairman and members. I don't know the number. I'd like to offer the A2 amendment And I just have a little brief thing here. The City of Minneapolis has been working with the Minnesota Restaurant Association and the Chamber of Commerce to draft this language that clarifies the city's ability to revoke or suspend a liquor license for a violation of a non-liquor-related license condition. The City of St. Paul has also provided input and is supportive. And there is no known opposition. I think it's been worked out with the restaurant owners and the bar owners as well. And Ms. Lesh is here if there are any questions on this.
Ms. Lesh, you give us about 1 minute or 2 minutes. Have you talked to everybody? I want to make sure that everybody's been touched on this because we haven't had testimony, so I just want to hear from you or somebody that, yes, everybody's been talked to and that it worked out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Melissa Lesh, Government Relations with the City of Minneapolis. And yes, Senator Pappas described this accurately, that our staff from the City of St. Paul and some of the other partners supporting the legislation have been working on this for several months, and we have come to an agreement on the language you have before you. But for details, I am going to defer to Grant Wilson, who's the head of the licensing and business licensing and regulatory services at the City of Minneapolis for the explain.
Brief comment, sir. Yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Again, this is a small bill that will allow.
Say your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Grant Wilson. I'm the manager of the City of Minneapolis Licensing Department.
Okay.
And this bill we've worked on for quite a while, and it will allow us to actually lighten the requirements for 98% of our bars and restaurants in Minneapolis, and we'll be able to hold accountable those 2% of problem bars in Minneapolis by having a few extra reasons to issue adverse license action should we need it.
Yeah. Any in the audience oppose to this Pappas Amendment? Seeing none, Senator Pappas will move. But wait a second. Council has a.
I think a close reader in the committee of the amendment suggested a good technical fix. I think we want to get rid of the comma on line 1.12. I think it reads a little more clearly that way. Maybe that could be incorporated in the amendment.
I'll incorporate that.
Okay. On the Pappas A2 amendment to Senate File 2346. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. I'm going to move the bill, but because there's a little provision at Senator Dahl's bill that has a little small tax implication, but I guess it has to go to the tax committee. So, Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to thank you for including all these various of issues in your omnibus liquor bill. You know, my little section 3, we definitely appreciate the cocktail room license. We were hoping that we could move a little bit farther and allow them to sell kind of sample bottles. Because it's really a marketing gimmick. If you are at the distillery and people like the cocktail and they want to bring a bottle and then they can also then pick up that later if they like the product at their traditional retail market. So it really helps the retailer, the local liquor store, all these kind of distilleries that we have around the state. Also, there are 4 or 5 now and 20 in the works, so I think this is really a growing industry using Minnesota products and Minnesota water. That's my commercial.
Well done.
Where's my bottle?
Work in progress, I think, probably. Okay, on any further discussion on the Metzen motion to re-refer Senate File 2346 as amended to the tax committee? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank all the folks in the audience and all the senators that worked on this. This is a pretty good bill, I believe. Finally, we have Senate File 2369, Payday Lending Reform. Senator Hayden, welcome to the committee. And,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for hearing this bill. Mr. Chair, I do have an A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that we'd like to talk about it in.
I think that's fair, Senator Carl, so to move that to get the bill into shape the author would like. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Hayden.
Good. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that we have a busy day. I know that I'm in a couple of committees as we speak. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Brian Rouchet of the JRLC to help go over the bill. I think we have multiple testifiers on both sides of this issue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Red. Mr. Rouchet, welcome to the committee.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the time. Thank you, Senator Hayden, for authoring this important legislation. This is the Payday Lending Reform Bill. And this came to Minnesotans for Fair Lending, which is a community coalition, and JRLC a couple of years ago from Holy Trinity Lutheran Church. You'll hear in a few minutes from Megan about how that journey started. But I want the committee to know that payday lending is effectively banned in 17 other states. And in fact, it was illegal here in Minnesota until 1995. So we have some history now with the product and with the lending habits. The industry has grown dramatically since it started, and it has doubled in the last 5 years. So some things about it are now becoming evident, especially since it's doubled in the last 5 years. About 380,000 loans are now issued in Minnesota. We are seeing more and more people caught in the debt trap. And that's what concerns us. We're really focusing this legislation on the debt trap. It is evidenced by the fact that the average borrower in Minnesota takes out 10 loans. So this idea that it's occasional is not proven in the data. The average borrower takes out 10. The average loan size is $380, and the average APR on that loan is 273%. I want to note that the APRs are always triple digit. 273 is the average. What happens is when you take out sequential loans at 273% interest rates, you are caught in a trap because it's that much harder to pay next month's bills. So what happens is you pay off that balance due and then you immediately take out another one, or very quickly take out another. 15% of, or actually a little bit over 15% of borrowers take out 20 or more in a year. So cyclical churning lending is very typical. And here's what hundreds of customers have told us, either through surveys or focus groups that we've conducted or individual interviews. What customers tell us is that payday loans do not solve problems. They make it worse. Two aspects of the product create the debt trap. The first is virtually no underwriting, no measuring of the person's ability to repay the loan. They don't look very much at expenses, just at income. And then the second thing is that there is no time limit on the length of time that a person can be indebted. There's no loan cap. There's no cap on the number of days indebted. Those two things work together. No underwriting, no limit on the days of indebtedness. That's what creates the trap. With Senator Hayden's delete all amendment, we are now agreeing to a loan cap of 5. We introduced the bill at 4. That sounds like movement of 1, but I want to point out that going from 4 to 5 is actually going from 8 to 10 weeks. Or for people who borrow on monthly checks, it's going from 4 months to 5 months. And a lot of people do borrow off of monthly checks. We feel that that kind of time is no longer considered a short-term loan. You are holding people in debt for a serious period of time at exorbitant interest rates. Exorbitant comes into play when people are in debt over time. I think they're exorbitant because when payday lending was allowed back into Minnesota, the industry said, hey, it's very costly to write these small amount loans. The origination fee as a percentage of the principal is pretty high. And they also said it's a very risky product. They expected, I think, a lot of defaults. But both things have proven to be untrue, I think. First of all, most people aren't doing short-term. They're repeat borrowers. They're in debt over time. So the APR is a true factor, a true comparison cost of a true comparison measure of the cost of borrowing. And the other thing that's happened is that the industry has used the auto withdrawal method. Part of the contract is to give the lender your checking account number, and then when your payday comes due, they auto-withdraw the balance due. So the default rate now is actually very, very low, around 2%. So the two main justifications for very high interest rates are no longer true. They're not just short-term, they're repeat, and the default rate is very, very low. I want to comment briefly on the loan cap because it has to be enforced. Lenders have to comply with the law, and so that requires a data collection or reporting service. And we think we have a very good proposal. Senator Hayden and the community groups looked around the country. We saw that there were quite a few other states that were using a private reporting service. In your packets, you will have a document that shows the number of states that use the private reporting service. Trying to figure out which one that is. Anyway, there's a color map. Oh, here it is. It's the document that's entitled The Case for Reforming Payday Lending. And if you page into it about 4 or 5 pages, you will see a color map of the states that do regulate payday lending and require the lenders to use some sort of private company to collect the data needed for compliance. One of them that we looked at most closely is in Indiana. One of the leaders in the industry is called Veritech. I don't care about Veritech. I don't sponsor them or care about them, but I just want to lift them up as a legitimate service that lenders use around the country. And in fact, Ace Cash Express, which is the second largest lender in Minnesota, uses Veritech in Delaware and in Washington, where there are loan caps. So this has been well thought out, and I want the members to know that. You will hear in just a minute from two customers that have been caught in the debt trap, Renee and Sherry. I want you to know that 5 other customers are profiled in a video that's available on our website. Fair Lending Minnesota or fairlendingmn.org. They are Rhonda, Leandra, Tisha, Terry, and Marilyn. Couldn't be here today, but we do have their stories available to you and to the public. There's one last dimension of this issue I want to mention, and that's that even though individual stories are out there and available to you, there's a community-wide impact. The amount of dollars that are spent on loan costs, the borrowing costs, not the principals themselves, we've been able to measure. And we have a report that's also in your packet that we released, I think it was about 2 weeks ago. Payday loan debt trap drains millions of dollars from financially strapped Minnesotans. And it looks like this. It's in your packet. The last year of full data, $11.5 million approximately were spent on loan costs across Minnesota. Those are dollars that households spent that weren't available for groceries or gasoline or rent. They also have a very low multiplier effect in the economy. Those dollars do not circulate as rapidly when they go to lenders as they would if they went to local merchants and to local economies. Most people are surprised by the amount extracted by the suburbs, in the suburbs and in greater Minnesota. That surprises most people, so I just wanted to point that out. Last point, we're not trying to end payday lending. We're looking at a loan cap, and there are other states where the industry still lends with the loan caps that we're talking about. Be happy to answer any questions. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions of Mr. Roche at this time? Okay, we'll continue
Mr.
on.
Mr. Chair?
Excuse me, Senator Pratt.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Boucher,
mm-hmm.
You mentioned the five loans within a period of 365 days. Are you concerned about the absolute number of loans at any time during a 12-month period or just those that are consecutive?
The way the bill is written, they don't have to be consecutive. It would be 5 in a past 365-day look back.
Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian, Mr. Reschi, sorry. Was looking at the national, the
yeah.
handout. The states that have caps, I couldn't find in any of the information that you had given me previously or not we had today a correlation of state and the cap number.
Okay.
Just to get a sense for where
sure.
the states that have caps are at.
Appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Reinert, I will promise to get you a fuller list, but the two that I memorized, because I think they're important for what we're doing here, are Delaware, which is at 5, and Washington State, which is at 8.
Okay. And just to follow up, Mr. Chair, are those the only two states with caps, or those are just the two you happen to know offhand?
Mr. Chairman, I would feel a lot better looking at that again. Those are just two that I know. I'm right. Sorry.
Thank you.
Yeah, there may be more.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ushi, I'm looking at this list of cities that you have here in the payday loan debt trap, drains millions in that case that you produced here. I'm just wondering how those numbers were derived. Are they there by city? Are they by the spending by city or the earnings by payday loan centers by city, or what are they?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Goodwin, the data that's reported to the Department of Commerce is by store location, so we really can't drill down any further. We don't know about residencies.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think we're going to deviate just a little bit off the list because the commissioner wanted to weigh in, and I think that's only appropriate that the commissioner of Commerce ought to probably be first, so that's a call I'm making.
We're good. Yeah. Good call.
Commissioner, welcome back to the Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's good to be back. Mike Rothman, the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I'm here to testify today in support of Senate File 2368. And to provide, which does provide additional regulation and consumer protection for payday lending in Minnesota. This is an important topic for me, not only as the regulator of lending financial institutions in Minnesota, but also personally and with my interest in financial literacy and education for Minnesotans. I also wish to convey the governor's strong feelings that this is one of the top policy priorities to seek strong reform of payday lending for consumers in Minnesota. While I'm here to testify about Senate File 2368, the department has its own payday lending bill, and I just wanted to touch a few minutes on the provisions in that bill. The department has basically two provisions. One has a 30% interest rate cap on all payday loans. And the second provision eliminates what is commonly referred to in this area as the industrial loan and thrift loophole. As to the first one, just to give you the thinking about this, it's generally been since the starting as commissioner in the beginning of 2011, during the height of the Great Recession, we saw the relationship between the economic downturn and its effect on credit and the uptick in small consumer loans from prior years due to the stress and strain on family budgets. And we've seen these data, we've seen the numbers, and generally believe that what should be allowed or what should be presented to consumers is a product or products at a fair interest rate, which will not allow them, or if I might say it, they'll be able to avoid the debt cycle and the debt trap. The department has witnessed the transformation of the original intent of the small consumer loan and the benefit it has provided to a product today that can oftentimes hurt individuals. The statistics are significant and staggering. This type of loan has doubled during the Great Recession, and it's due in part to the debt cycle. It's pushed the average borrowers into taking 10 loans a year and greater, and that's about 20% of Minnesotans who are caught in this debt trap. We saw, when we look back at the data in 2012, 62% of borrowers, the total number of borrowers in this area, took out 5 or more loans. And what this means, and it's telling us, is that a large number of consumers who seek payday loans are taking out multiple loans. The slices of the pie in all of the sectors in this area is increasing. While the aggregate number rises and falls, 5 or more, 10 or more, 15 or more, and 20 or more loans annually are growing as a percentage of how many loans are out there. While the slice of consumers taking out less than 5 loans annually is actually shrinking. Borrowers cannot afford to pay the original loan amount as agreed, and they find that they must renew the loan again and again at higher rates. Borrowers end up in debt for months. And what we need to do, what I think, the question is, what do we need to do to help Minnesota consumers? We need good quality loans at affordable rates for low and middle income people, the average Minnesotans. We need better financial products. I've been encouraging, just like our federal counterparts, the FDIC, the OCC, the Federal Reserve, and the other regulators, to offer a smaller dollar loan product that's affordable, has affordable interest, reasonable interest rates, with no or low fees and payments that reduce the principal balance of the loan. We need more financial capability education and funding. It was a topic of discussion at one of the last hearings we had here. And we need the funding to teach people about their family budgets, avoiding debt traps, and how to save. Since I started as commissioner, one of our priorities was to develop and work with financial institutions on financial literacy and financial capability. Minnesota now has a 10-agency working group. We are recognized nationally by some of the work that we've done with respect to savings, with respect to financial capability and regulation at the federal level by the United States Department of Treasury and others about how can we help people, help them save, help them build financial capability and education. And it's from these discussions and stakeholder groups that we have found that it's important to find either alternative products or a better way for our low-income, middle-income families, our friends, our neighbors, both in the urban area and in the suburban area, as the data indicates. It's not just one area of the state. It's a variety. When we see an average annual percentage rate of 237% and look at how quickly the interest adds up, especially for the average borrower taking out 10 or more loans annually, this is a terrible financial situation for our families. And as you've heard, or you will hear, actually, there are compelling stories of Minnesotans hurt by payday lending. There are people who are scraping by with incomes and on their earnings, with tough family budgets, trying to make it ends meet and deciding what they should use their budgets for and what they should pay their bills for. These are the stories of Minnesotans that we think are compelling and that support the bill, support the efforts to do what we can to assist. And therefore, I urge the committee to support this legislation and would be happy to answer any questions.
Questions of the Commissioner? Senator Reinhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, first of all, my apologies for not getting back to you earlier today. This was Duluth Day. I had students from my college here. My mayor was here. I had the pastor giving the invocation, so I just want you to know that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Reiner, my mom, as you know, grew up in Duluth, and right. So Duluth Day is terrific.
All right, thank you.
We're going to take a vote on that? Duluth is terrific. I love it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'm trying to gather some information, the same question I had for Mr. Reshid. Do you have a sense for what's the trend line nationally for, you know, which states have caps and what that number is? I mean, you know, frankly, I'm a terrible poker player because I believe in transparency. The part of this that I've struggled with is a magic number on that versus just a straight-up resting period in between so that we can break the linkage of using one to pay off another. But, you know, I have great respect for you as our commissioner. I appreciate the work you're doing. So just am curious as to your thoughts on that question.
Sure. Seen either this document or one that I have. I don't have it with me. I actually thought to myself I could bring it up. But there is a... when we can get it to you. So we will provide. Oh, we do. Sorry. My trusty staff.
No, Peter does a nice job.
This is from the Pew Research, and so we'll provide this data. But there are 15 restrictive states that have no payday loan storefronts. So there's actually states that totally ban payday lending. And then there are states that are hybrids that have payday loan companies but maintain exacting requirements, such as lower limits on fees or loan usage or longer repayment periods. And then there are the permissive states. You saw that map. It's all the rest of the states here. Mm-hmm. Happy to share this with you. And then as to your specific question earlier as to this chart doesn't give you the breakdown in terms of the cap on loans. Let me take a pause. The other thought that popped into my head in answer to your question is that as regulators, when I sit at the table with regulators on the financial institution side, other banking regulators, the federal regulators, and even in a conversation I had with the U.S. Department of Treasury on financial literacy, the topic of payday lending and the concerns from regulators from all over the country has trended to be a serious concern.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Commissioner, if there's 15 states that don't allow this payday lending, I would think there's still a need out there in those 15 states in this area. Do we have any knowledge of where they go or how they fill that void? If assuming somebody needs $300 to get their car out of the snowplow bank and is willing to go to work the next day and pay the $350 or whatever it might be,
sure.
Where do they go in these 15 states?
Mr. Chair,
I've got that.
Let me give you two or three points on that. The Pew Research has looked at what do people do in the alternative of not having payday lending available to them.
That's my question, yeah.
Some of the answer is that consumers will turn to three or four or five different areas. One would be to look at their family budgets and cut down on expenses. Two would be to go to other family members. Three would be to try to figure out short advances from employers or something like that. And then and I can't speak for each state, there would be potential to look at short-term borrowing and other avenues. The second thought that occurred to me was when you asked is that, you know, could they turn to traditional banks? And what the trend is, and it's informative to a certain extent, is this, is that traditional banks have, and maybe you've heard about this, is the advance, taking out an advance and being charged a fee as a type of payday lending product. And the federal regulators are discouraging that activity by the traditional banks to do these kinds of alternatives, largely because they are payday lending activity products. So it would depend and it would vary from state to state. But that's without being able to have that data, I wouldn't be able to speak on the specific state.
Mr. Chairman,
I would think a couple of those options you gave might have been tested or tried, you know. My relatives are here or there, and that's just my opinion. I don't know that, but
Mr. Chairman,
I mean, they've exhausted their relatives, I would think, and they've tried them a few times and maybe have used them. Senator?
Mr. Chair, I know Mr. Ruscha has some other information, but I think the thing that I would say, and we're going to hear from testifiers from different perspectives, that I just wouldn't assume anything in terms of why people use it or why wouldn't they. Maybe sometimes people don't want their relatives to know that they don't have reserves that they should, or maybe they've spent their money in places in which they wouldn't want everybody to know, and so they go here. So I want to set the stage, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Ruscha has some others, just to make sure that as we walk down this road, I wouldn't make the assumption that people have tried all of these means before they got to the payday lending.
They've tried some of them. You can't just say emphatically that they've not tried their relatives. Some are embarrassed and probably haven't, but Mr. Ruscha.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The state of North Carolina, I think, is really instructive because they had payday lending for quite a while. It was sunset in their – they had a sunset provision in their law, and they let it sunset, so it went away. And so the banking commissioner, Commissioner Rothman's counterpart in North Carolina, commissioned a study that was done by the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, that did some really good socioeconomic survey research on where did people go? What did they do? And Commissioner Rothman's absolutely right. They made arrangements with their creditors. They borrowed from relatives and friends. They tried to enhance their income a bit, either through more hours or whatever they could. They cut back on household expenses. Some used their credit cards a little bit more, which would be probably double-digit APR instead of triple-digit. But the really telling thing about the research was they asked people who had used it, are you better off or do you miss it? And customers, by a huge majority, said they were better off without it.
Yeah, that's good. Senator Brown first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess this would be for any of the testifiers. I'm just wondering, in those 15 states that do not allow payday lending, are loan sharks and unregulated online lenders a problem of significance in those states?
Mr. Chairman, I do know this, that the Internet usage for payday lending is almost exactly the same as it is with states that have stores. So there's really no Internet effect of, no stores, everybody goes to the Internet. It's not true. It's about the same. In fact, it's slightly lower in states that don't have it, which is probably due to some sort of marketing effect.
Senator Dahlin and Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, of course, this bill doesn't eliminate payday lending. We still can have five a year. So we're talking about scenarios about what if, where do they go? But a question for the commissioner. I see a handout from the lenders themselves that the Department of Commerce has received zero complaints. Is that accurate portrayal in terms of what they're putting in front of me here?
Mr.
Rothman.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl. The department has, since I started, taken a proactive approach to payday lending. We have, just as you have seen here, received complaints from stakeholders. I've talked with stakeholder groups, Legal Aid Society, bringing the issue to us since 2011. One particular area that we have focused on is online payday lenders. So back to Senator Brown's question, for example, in Minnesota, this is what we've done. If you're illegal, if you're not registered or licensed with the Department of Commerce and you're doing illegal online payday lending in Minnesota and we hear about it, I'll stop it. We'll stop it. We'll do a cease and desist order, and we've taken action against numerous ones. Let me just say that we've done, for example, Omega Investments, Sanguine Investments, AmeriLoan, and PAC Management Group are prime examples of this online payday that we've taken action against for selling payday loans that have exorbitant fees on it. Person in Maple Grove was charged $105 in fees for a $350 payday loan. Another in Mora took out a $400 loan and was charged $120 in fees, just as an example. In addition, the department has been monitoring, and we've also focused a lot on other payday companies. One that was particularly egregious is one called Western Sky. Western Sky was a sham payday lending. They tried to skirt the laws of Minnesota, and we took action to stop that. It was an operation operated out of California called Cash Call, operated nationally. But from my perspective, anytime there's a violation of our laws, we'll take action to stop it. And to the extent we have any complaints, like everyone here, we've heard complaints or the concerns from stakeholders about payday lending and the interest rates and all the same issues you're hearing here today.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you. Maybe counsel can answer this. What's the legal limit for other kinds of loans right now? Do we have statutory limits for other bank loans? And
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, that's a very complicated question. The usury laws in the state are extremely complex. There's a statutory rate of 8%, but it only applies in limited situations. Different kinds of loans have different rates attached. if you get a credit card, since by federal law they can import rates from other states, it's essentially unlimited by Minnesota. So it really depends on the loan and the circumstances, and you have to look carefully at each one to see what the actual limit is.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Chair, one more question,
sure.
please. Senator Hayden, did you consider putting interest rate limits in your bill, and if you, why didn't you?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin. You know, we were trying to negotiate a bill that we thought all parties could agree to. I would say that Senator Latz, via Commissioner Rossman and the governor, does have a bill that does have an interest rate in it that is out there. So I think we were hoping to come to some sort of agreement with the industry, something that they could live with as we also protect consumers. So it is an option out there, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you.
Let me just add that Senator Hayden has been working both sides here and trying to come to amicable solution, if you will. And we're not probably there, but I know you have been working with both sides. So, Senator,
Mr. Chairman,
think Senator Kosaka first, then Senator Lentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just thinking about the comment that the commissioner talked about, you know, they're pursuing numerous online illegal activities, and that was, you know, one of the things I thought about as we're trying to find a solution here. Is if we don't have this avenue that's regulated, you know, will it be more things on the internet? Will it be more things out of state? And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm not sure I think this is a wise direction for people to go. But at the same time, if they're in a desperate place, you know, they've gone to their family, that's not an avenue. You know, we need a place for them to go, and I would rather have it regulated than not. And I'm, you know, I've talked to both sides of the issue and both sides of the aisle, frankly, trying to find, you know, where is the place that we can find some compromise and agreement. And somewhere in here, I'd like to offer the A3 amendment and have a conversation about that. But I'll wait for you.
Yeah, I think we'll probably wait and hear all the testimony. And then I think that's the – so we get everything out in the open and then do your Senator Latz.
I was just going to say I do have prepared also an amendment that incorporates the governor's proposal, which has a 30% interest rate cap. I'd certainly be willing to offer it if that's something the committee is interested in doing.
Okay.
But it's available.
Okay. Further discussion. Senator Pratt, we'd like to try to get this move today. There's about 20 testifiers, so I think we're going to.
Sure.
Mr. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it, and I'll be brief. Commissioner Rothman, a couple of things. You mentioned that your department is the regulator for this industry, and we've been talking about the rates, but we've got usury rates laid out very clearly in statute. Have you found violations of these statutes, and what have your regulators been doing in response to that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, are you, which particular?
I'm looking at specifically statute 47.59, subsection 4. It lays out 36% per year on $300 or less, 21% per year on that part of unpaid balances that exceeds 300, and 15% per year on the unpaid balances that exceeds $1,000, and 19% per year on unpaid balances of the amount financed. So we're talking a lot about rates, and yet we seem to have some very well-defined rate structures as a regulator. Have we found anything that violates the law as it sits today?
Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt, I didn't come today with the data on violations, and I can ask our staff. But I did speak about the online lending. Traditionally, these are the usury rates that apply across the board. So banks, financial institutions, and whenever they apply to them, they have to be in compliance with them. And to the extent they're not, we'll, you know, keep a close eye on it.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we'll get into some folks that want to testify, and you want me, Senator Hayden, could just go right down the list here, what I have in front of me. And I've got Megan Olson and Renee Bergeron, Cherish Holland. I don't put one or two want to come up at one time, or how do you put
they can Senator all Hayden, start yours? Going in three in a row, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Jeez, get them through.
All right. Yep. Mr. Chair and members, thank you for letting me speak today. My name is Megan Olson Biebighauser, and I'm the parish organizing leader at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church in South Minneapolis. And it was our congregation that that first raised this issue and brought it to Brian Rushi and the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. And I just tell you a little bit about how that happened. In 2011, we had an Ace Cash Express open up on the same block as our where our church is located in South Minneapolis. And we became curious. We already had an existing payday lender about three blocks away, and so it caught our attention, made us ask the question of what does this business do? What does this mean for our neighborhood? So we did a bit of a listening campaign within our congregation and also in the neighborhood that we serve, and quickly learned stories of members in our congregation and our community who had been financially devastated by these products. Heard many stories, some that, like the ones you'll hear today, from other testifiers. And so concern for those individuals, and then also I'll tell you, when Ace opened up, we were pleased to have one less empty storefront on East Lake Street, but quickly learned that this was not a business that was going to contribute to the vibrancy of our neighborhood. In fact, it was going to prevent some of our neighbors from participating more fully in the local economy, and by stripping them of their resources and assets. So that's why we brought it to Brian and to the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, and why we're here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Olson. Is this Renee Bergeron? Is it?
Oh, it's Bergeron.
Okay, I was using the past. I was using the past tense. Bergeron. Okay. Thank you for coming to the Minnesota Senate.
I'm Renee Bergeron. I'm from Duluth, Minnesota. I'm a single mom of four kids. I've had the same job for over 12 years. It's a long story, so I'm not going to get into the details, but basically the life situation kind of led me to my first payday loan. And at that time, you know, when you have four kids, they have all these expenses, and you can only ask your family for so much, where you don't want to keep bugging them. And so when I found out about a payday loan, I thought, well, that was a quick way to just get some money to last for a couple weeks. It'll take care of my need, and then it should be done, and I should be caught up. That's when I learned that it was not a quick solution. It didn't end. I couldn't afford to pay the entire amount that was due because of the interest on top of that amount I borrowed. It was going to cut into an expense that I did have to pay. So at that time, I paid the loan off complete and started new paperwork. And because I did that, I was offered a higher amount than my original loan. Then, well, the process itself is not that hard. It's pretty easy. They only check a certain amount of background check. They don't check to see, at the time, you know, I was eligible for food support, child care assistance, medical assistance for the kids. So that's not things that you locate on there. That would have been a factor to show that I am in a position where I might not be able to take more than I should. I mean, it's just a bait to get. Once you spend your money and you have nothing left, you're like, yeah, I'll take that extra amount today or tomorrow or whatever. Eventually, I had to seek another loan because I just couldn't go to my family and tell them what I did. I knew it wasn't a good choice, but at the time it seemed like a good idea. And and it was more money that they could help me with. And then after that, it's just started spiraling. When all was said and done, I was paying at least $600 in interest each paycheck. And none of them were online. I sought help through our Salvation Army because I was about to lose my housing. The landlord was very good to us. Just because he knew the situation, how I was just not affording things. With a connection to Salvation Army, I met someone from our Community Action Program. We kind of took a look at all the paperwork and realized it was absolutely impossible to pay that amount of money that was owed. And they did offer, the solution at the time, I had to stop paying it and just deal with the consequences. I still have a judgment on my record from one of them, the Payday America one. But I did get support with budgeting. I get help with support through housing program. Services I wouldn't have known about, I didn't know about at the time, which through their help, it's preventing me from even looking at doing another loan again. I just would like to ask you to support the bill to reform payday lending in Minnesota. Thank you.
Any questions of the witness? Thank you very much for coming. This is Holland. Welcome to the Minnesota Senate.
Thank you, Chairman Metzen, members of the committee. My name is Cherish Holland, and I'm a financial counselor from the Wilmer Office of Lutheran Social Service Financial Counseling. And thank you for allowing me to share my experiences of the clients we counsel who have payday loans. And please, first, let me give you some background information. Lutheran Social Service of Minnesota provides budget and debt counseling to over 10,000 Minnesotans of all walks of life and income levels. And I have worked for LSS for 17 years, and I love my job. Not everyone can say that, but I do. I love my job. So my LSS financial counseling coworkers and I are committed to giving people the tools and the encouragement they need to take charge of their financial situation. And I can tell you on a day-to-day basis, the clients that are the most difficult for us to work with because of their situation are those in the payday loan debt trap. Please let me share three client stories that illustrate how payday loans become a cycle of debt. The first client I'd like to tell you about is a 65-year-old man from Duluth who lives on Social Security and also works a part-time job. His hours were reduced, and he took his first payday loan of $700 to fill in for some living expenses. Like most loan customers, 2 weeks later, he couldn't pay the loan in full, so he immediately took out a new loan. By the time he came to LSS for help, his payday loans had grown to six, and it is very typical for people to start with one loan and fall into the debt trap of multiple loans. The second client that I'd like to tell you about is a 43-year-old woman living in the northwest suburbs. And she also works full-time and also a part-time job. And I'm going to quote what she told us. When you aren't making much money at your hourly shift job, you do what you have to do, and you may get a payday loan. The thought process is when you get your next check, you'll pay back the loan and have some money left over. But it's easy to miscalculate your paycheck when you're an hourly employee, and then you end up short the next pay period. So you take out another loan, and so it goes. Again, those were her words. When she came to LSS, she had three payday loans left, and on just one, she was paying $95 every 2 weeks on a $770 balance. This is a hardworking person trying to fix her finances, but she was painted into a corner by this product. She and others who take out payday loans tell their counselors like me how the sense of shame or regret that they feel for falling into this trap. The last client I'd like to talk to you about was someone I actually had the privilege of speaking with last month. And she's a married empty nester who works a professional job in the healthcare field. And she told me 2 years ago her husband had some legal trouble, and she took out a $500 payday loan, and the debt trap was set. She paid $80 per paycheck for a full year. Again, $80 per paycheck on a $500 loan for a full year. During this time, she took out a 401k loan trying to help herself out, which reduces income and doesn't help at all. And now she owes income taxes as well. She also got behind on her student loan payment because of her cash flow problem because of the payday loan. She became overdrawn several times from her bank account, and after the year and with several overdrafts, her bank account was finally closed. When I visited with her, even though over the course of the year she'd repaid almost $2,000 to the payday lender for, the original debt of $500, the payday lender filed a $543 judgment against her, sinking her credit score and her self-esteem to all-time lows. And when I asked her about her experience in taking out the payday loan, she responded, and again I quote, "It was never a positive. Never in a million years would I do that again." This is what is actually happening in Minnesota. Working people who are living paycheck to paycheck, and at some point they take out a payday loan to fill in some living expenses. From that point on, the norm is to not be able to pay back that first loan, and so they take on others with escalating consequences. In fact, an escalator is a great metaphor to use in understanding payday loans. You get on and you get swept up, onward, upward. Again, the consequences, the financial consequences are great. Multiple loans, multiple pain, including robbing retirement savings, getting behind on priority expenses like car loans, student loans, and even owing income taxes. As I said previously, I love my job, but it pains me to see my clients who are stuck in the payday lending cycle. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Senator Kosoka.
Just a brief question to the testifier.
Sit still.
First of all, thank you for what you do. I think helping people prioritize spending and make decisions is very good, very positive. When somebody comes to a place and they come to you and they can't pay, do you help them work through bankruptcy issues? Or do you ever do that as a course of action?
Chairman Minson, committee members, yes. We at times talk to people about bankruptcy. Yes. In this situation where someone comes to us with like a $543 judgment, you know, typically that wouldn't be enough money to look at filing on. So we would talk about, we really focus on the budgeting and, you know, going through a budget, talking about where maybe some money could be saved so that they could work out a repayment plan. Typically, we really work with people on how to prioritize their debts and to get out of debt, not using bankruptcy, but we sometimes talk to people about bankruptcy.
So Mr. Chair, one quick follow-up then. So if they did go through a bankruptcy, then who would be responsible for that debt?
Chairman, all of us would be. It would be, the loss to the community in bankruptcy is significant, yes.
Right, Mr. Chair, but directly it's whoever borrowed the money, whether it's a bank or a payday lender or whatever, and then in return we all end up paying through higher fees, et cetera. But, yeah. No, I do appreciate your insight.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You're excused.
Sure.
Welcome, folks, to the Minnesota Senate. You may proceed to identify yourselves for the table.
My name is Sherry Shannon. Thank you, Chairman. I live in Roseville, and in December of 2012, I took out a first day payday loan from Payday America on 26th and Nicollet. And I was taking it out because I was moving, and I needed some extra expenses. And so when I took out the payday loan, I took out about, I believe it was $130, $140.
Could you move that closer? I can't hear you. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. You got to kind of beat it a little bit.
which was I took out about 130 or 140, which was the APR was 260%. And since I received Social Security disability, I was told to come back on the 3rd, because that's when I get my disability. And on the 3rd, I paid my loan off, and so I paid. When I paid that off, I took out a new loan to cover my other expenses. And each month when I received my Social Security, I paid off that loan. And then a new one comes out, and then I'm like, how can I get out of this? And that's what I keep asking myself. So today I owe $264, and the APR of my current is 171%. And in the last year, I paid nearly $500 in fees to the Payday American. And I still owe, like I said, I still owe $264.50. And after just a few loans, I was just stuck. And I wanted, once I was in a trap, I just didn't know what else to do. And so that's why I'm here, to ask you to I want you to support this bill and change the situation for me and other people in my situation.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you very much.
Ma'am, Senator Reinhart, did you have a question for Sherry?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you for coming. I can tell you're nervous, and you know, anytime you have to come sit before a bunch of people in suits that you don't know, I know it's hard. So thanks for coming.
Very good. Thank you. Okay. I think that's it. Do you have any other witness, Mr. Hayden, at this point?
No, Mr. Chair. I think that was all that we had scheduled.
They all did like Senator Reinhart said, did a wonderful job. I think all of them. Senator or Mr. Cassidy, are you? You're on the list. You're the next up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Cassidy with the law firm of Stinson Leonard Street in Minneapolis. I am here today to speak in opposition to this bill on behalf of our client, Payday America. Payday America operates 15 locations throughout Minnesota, employing over 100 team members and providing loans to thousands of Minnesotans every month who need short-term credit. In addition to the negative impacts on our employees, this bill will effectively eliminate over $100 million in short-term credit currently available to Minnesotans, writing off tens of thousands of Minnesotans who each year access short-term credit. This legislation will have the complete opposite effect of what the supporters of the legislation intend. This legislation will force individuals into worse options when they need a short-term credit resource. By limiting their choices, you drive them to higher cost, unregulated lenders who use less than ethical debt collection practices and for whom, as a regulator, you have no control over. These choices include obtaining loans on the street from the black market or loan sharks, the internet from both offshore and onshore unregulated lenders, from unregulated sovereign nation payday lenders, and from border state lenders, some of whom are unregulated, such as Wisconsin, at fees and interest rates much higher than allowed under Minnesota's tough consumer laws. I'd like to ask members to consider, when they listen to the testimony previous to mine, to keep in mind where many of the folks, many of the testifiers, many of the people that Mr. Russi was talking of or speaking of, where they received their loans. No one's asking them that question. Were they receiving their loans on the internet? Were they receiving them through regulated lenders? Were they receiving them in Superior, Wisconsin? We don't know. They haven't answered that question yet, nor has the department answered the question of whether or not they do have complaints from consumers who took out loans from regulated lenders in the state of Minnesota. We are unaware of any material complaints from Minnesota consumers involving our loans, loans written by other regulated consumer loan and payday loan lenders, and regulated by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Minnesota's regulated short-term consumer loan industry is a safe, reasonable, and responsible place for consumers seeking financial products. Putting us out of business or restricting customers' access to credit doesn't reduce the demand or reduce the need. It simply leaves a $100 million gap in our consumer credit market. I'd like to pass out, Mr. Chairman, if you will, an article that is on the Attorney General's website. As you well know, the Attorney General has spent some considerable time chasing internet lenders, as we have as well. I have an attorney in the room here that spends an inordinate amount of time helping shut down internet payday lenders who like to mimic our business and who rip off people and get them in trouble and harass them with unscrupulous debt collectors. The supporters of this legislation say there's no underwriting conducted on these loans, and therefore consumers are unable to repay their obligation. Nothing could be further from the truth. To be clear, we don't make loans to customers unless they have a verified and sustained income and they have the ability to repay their loan. Take a look at Attorney General Swanson's website page. It'll describe what they have done in the past few years chasing down internet lenders. I believe she's been successful in chasing one down that actually has a domestic location in the United States. But most of these folks are elusive. They operate offshore. If they are operating in the United States, the first time they get in trouble with the regulator, they move someplace else. At the end of the article, I think what's most important to point out is that she is recommending that you don't do business with these folks. You stay away from anyone who offers unregulated short-term credit, and you go to places like Payday America or Unbank, regulated entities in the state of Minnesota for your short-term credit needs, and she outlines criteria in which you should consider when you have a need for short-term credit. So who are the customers of Payday America and the regulated consumer loan industry in Minnesota? Our customers are middle-class Minnesotans. They're educated. They're young families. They have children. They're stable, working-class people. They work in state government. They work at the University of Minnesota. They work at the Mayo Clinic. They are not poor. Our customers are intelligent Minnesota consumers who sometimes find the need for short-term credit. They do not want their financial resources limited. Some of you here today may recall that in 2009 we passed tough consumer lending law legislation, which we believe is the toughest in the country. I call on Mr. Russi and his statistics in terms of states that ban payday lending. I believe the number is probably half of what he is testifying to, that the other half are probably states that don't regulate at all. Minnesota didn't ban payday lending before 1995. We simply didn't have any laws on the books. We put a law on the books in order to protect people who are getting ripped off by unregulated lenders. The current statutes in both Chapter 47 and 53 were first contemplated years ago to protect citizens from unscrupulous characters who operated underground and who took advantage of workers in need of short-term cash. The law was created to bring these transactions above ground and put reasonable regulations in place to protect our citizens and workers. Was it contemplated that these loans were short-term transactions, unsecured, with high interest rates and fees? Of course it was. Lawmakers also understood at the time that without the regulation, the business of short-term remember, this was before the internet, by the way, the business of short-term lending would go underground and individuals would continue to be taken advantage of and people would turn to our border states where there are no regulations or there were no regulations. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we respectively oppose Senator Hayden's legislation. If you fairly consider the consequences of this legislation and the critical need to provide Minnesota consumers a safe and responsible place for them to access short-term credit products, you'll not pass this legislation. Please respect the intelligent choices of a lot of the folks that are in this room today and thousands of other Minnesotans who in times of need rely on our products and services. Take the time to view this issue in the context of what it really is and what's really happening on the ground in Minnesota. Lots of articles are passed out. Lots of studies are passed out. Lots of academic journals are passed out. One thing is missing from all of them. None of them mention Minnesota's regulatory landscape. We simply don't have a problem here. The East Coast lenders, the West Coast lenders, the Chicago lenders don't do business here because they won't. We have the toughest laws in the country. Our industry works here with local folks, and it works well. Finally, a couple other things I'd like to point out. Think about the cost of these transactions. We throw around interest rates of 200, 300, 400. I've seen as high as 1,100%. Think of the transaction this way. An average transaction is approximately $350 to $380. Is it a good deal or a bad deal to charge someone $35 to borrow that money for 2 weeks? That's really what we're talking about here. Finally, take a look at a few of the materials in your packet. I'll close with this. to look at the choices that folks and folks on this side and this side of the room are making each and every day. There's a chart in your packet that outlines a number of transactions that we all face day in and day out, one of which is writing a check or paying a credit card. And you will see that, I apologize, Mr. Chairman, I had it here a minute ago, right here. This should be in your packet, right there.
Okay, yep, we've got it somewhere. Yep.
The first one, 391%, a payday loan, 14 days for $100, 391%. The second one, overdraft fees, 755%. Credit card late fee, 965%. On and on it goes. These are the choices people make when they walk in our store every day, whether or not they want to be late on their credit card, whether or not they want to be late on their utility bill. These are costly items for them compared to taking out a 14-day short-term loan from a payday lender. Mr. Chairman, with that, we have a number of folks that would like to testify. I hope you listen intently, and I'll stand for questions once we're complete. Thank you.
Any questions at this point, Senator Dahl?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do believe the problem's real. I carried two payday lending bills in 2009 and 2010, and I think the problem still exists. And again, most of your testimony, Mr. Cassidy, again, infers that we're getting rid of payday lending. My question is, and I believe that safe and responsible short-term lending is no more than 5 per year. Why are you opposed to limiting the number of payday loans to 5 a year?
Kennedy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, very good question. And I've given this a lot of thought, and I've looked at a lot of the statistics, including the statistics that Mr. Elwood and Mr. Russi have produced from Commerce Department records. If you look at where we believe the problem is of repeat of folks that get in these repeat loans, they seem to bunch up in certain places at 10, 12, 15, 20, even 25. What we're offering up is that let's reduce that amount. Let's get it down to a reasonable number. Folks that are going to be capped at 4 or 5 loans that need 10, they're going to the internet. They're going to go to lenders in the border states. They're going to go to bad places. We're saying why not give them a reasonable option, put a reasonable cap on this, because once they max out at 4, in fact, one thing that was left out of the testimony is that we're not just talking about 4 here. We're talking about 90 days of indebtedness. It's and or. So if you're so unlucky that you're in trouble between January 1st and March 31st, you're out of luck the rest of the year, including times when you get in trouble when you really have an emergency.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question, Mr. Dahl. Senator Dahl.
Thank you. Okay, we've got a list of 2, 4, 6, 8, or 10, or 12 here. Stuart Taper, are you ready? Are you here? Thank you for appearing here. Yes, sit down, please. Yes. And all the testifiers, please state your name before you get started.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. My name is Stuart Taper, and I am a partner in the Unloan Company, as well as the Unbanked Company. We operate 14 stores in the state of Minnesota. In addition, I serve on the board of the Financial Service Centers of America, which represents over 7,000 locations in the U.S. Our company was started in 1984 and employs over 50 people, and we offer a variety of financial services, including check cashing, bill payment, wire transfer, money orders, bus passes, stamps, notary service, and at 9 of our locations, we offer short-term unsecured loans. Unloan is licensed as an industrial loan and thrift. This is a license that goes back to post-Depression era times, as to the best of my knowledge, and we use it because of the flexibility. You hear people talk about a loophole. In this case, there is no loophole. It allows us to make loans larger than $350. It allows us to offer installment loans. It also allows us to do our check cashing business under that license. So for us, it's a necessary license. We are opposed to the proposed legislation for a number of reasons. First, 4 or 5 times is too small a number. How can we regulate, and are we going to start regulating the number of financial emergencies American people have? In the testimony that I've heard from other places, as recently as yesterday, I heard someone testify that that an average American has between 9 to 12 economic emergencies per year. What's an economic emergency? It's different to every person. It could be a child getting sick. It could be a car that needs repair. It could be temporary loss of a job for some short-term reason or whatever. Secondly, when you talk about the number of loans in existence, how is it that you are to verify whether or not someone has a loan, say, from a family member or an employer? These people are not going to be required to report to a reporting service. So, in essence, someone may be in violation, may not be eligible from day one. They may have had a loan from their parents. Third, debt-to-income ratio is, again, a very difficult thing to verify. At Unloan, we do not exceed 25% of net income. So the thought that we are not doing any underwriting is completely false. Matter of fact, we look at a recent bank statement, and when I say recent, it's got to be from that day or the day before. And we take a look at other items on there to see if there's other loans, and if there are other loans, that will play into the amount of funds that they are eligible to receive. And that 25% is on someone that's working, getting a loan every 2 weeks. Getting a paycheck every 2 weeks. Fourth, what are the alternatives if this is passed? You will see, as has been testified, that more customers will go to internet, whether it be offshore, onshore, regulated, non-regulated. They will go to neighboring states, or they will find other avenues for this money. Our company has met recently with Commissioner Rothman. At that time, he told us of no complaints that we've against our company, and we are not aware of any for our industry at all. And add to the earlier testimony, there was only, I believe, one person that testified they were getting a loan from a licensed Minnesota company. And from that, they were paying off the loan on a regular basis, and they were taking out another loan. So there was nothing improper about it. Whether the situation should have been, I can't comment on. Add-on loan. We have issued in the last 2 years slightly under 10,000 loans each year. And in both years, the number is around 1,300 different people have taken out those loans. So the number of economic emergencies that I testified to earlier kind of jives with the numbers that we have here. As for extended payment plans, this is something that, again, that isn't really being discussed, but it's something that we offer on a regular basis. We want our customers to pay their loans back. And if that means that we're taking $25 every 2 weeks for 3 or 4 months, so be it. This is not something that we're mandated to do. This is something we do as good business practice. And finally, Minnesota is one of the very few regulated states that has storefront locations with such low rates. If you remember to this committee a few years ago, there was a researcher named Pat Cirillo who testified that she hasn't seen another state with rates this low with storefront locations. And the reason is, for all these licensed companies, this is an ancillary business. This is not our main business. It is a nice business. And the reason that people come to us, our business is very transparent. Our customers know exactly what they're going to be charged, what they're going to be the terms, and it's all done in a very transparent way. And finally, the thought that our customers are extremely financially savvy. They know what makes more sense to them, and they know coming in and getting a $300 loan and paying $30 is a better alternative than bouncing two or three checks and paying over $100. With that, I close my remarks, and I will be happy to answer any questions that anyone should have.
Thank you very much. Next witness. Ms. Ekman. Welcome to the state capitol.
Hi. My name's Rebecca Ekman. Thank you for having me. I had payday loans back in, I think it was the mid-90s. They had payday loans in Richfield, and they were great. And I used them for buying Beanie Babies at the time when they would come out. And that was basically all it was for. And then they kind of went away. But I remembered them, and then when I got into a situation where I was falling apart on my bills and stuff, I didn't know that they had any around still. I couldn't find any, so I went online trying to locate something locally, and I couldn't find, the names of the places that I used to use. So I just searched payday loans, and they kind of took your information and shot you over to whatever one they chose for you. And I ended up having loans that were just basically interest only, and it was ridiculous. And I tried to get copies of their contracts, and it wouldn't print out on my PDF, but they wouldn't send it to me. They wouldn't give me their address. And I finally said, this is ridiculous. And it just kept escalating to the point where I had four of them at one point. And it was just seriously interest only all the time and never paid on the principal ever. And you had no idea where these people were located at. So I finally said, I don't know what else to do. Well, it happened that I lost my checkbook in the snow on my way to a doctor's appointment. And so I had to cancel my bank account and open a different one. And these people literally lost their mind. They were calling me, harassing me, saying, you need to give me your new bank account. And I'm like, absolutely not. I'm not giving you anything. All the interest that you've taken from me so far. Sorry, I'm hoarse. I have a cold right now. But it was just basically all interest. They said, I think you've been paid multiple times over in just what you've gotten from me up to this point. And they would call me at work. I wanted to send them a cease and desist letter. They wouldn't give you their addresses. They wouldn't respond to emails. They wouldn't do anything for you except call me at work all the time. So I finally said, I'm going to email the cease and desist letters to the email addresses they gave me. So I did that, and I figured that would solve the problem, but it didn't. AmeriLoans, and I think they have a sister company called U.S. Fast Cash, called me at work every single day for 2010, 11, and 13. They just stopped calling me, I think, last year. And it was relentless. It was at home and at my work, even though I told them in the email, do not contact me at work. You jeopardize my job. They didn't care. But when I found Payday America, I told them, I said over the phone, I said, please tell me you're not like these online people. And they're like, absolutely not. It's a payment. And your interest is like $30 on $300. And I said, that sounds really reasonable to me, considering a bank overdraft is $35. And they were paying things at your bank from smallest to biggest normally. And I think in 1999 it changed, and they started paying the biggest thing down to the smallest. And so they could nail you for a whole bunch of overdrafts. And I actually filed a complaint with the Attorney General at TCF because they did not send out a notification of this new way of paying their checks. And I actually got a refund of like maybe $400, but that doesn't even count. That doesn't cover half of what I spent on overdrafts with the bank. But my point is that payday loans from Payday America, they're above board. they're honest, they're people, and they're right there. It's not somebody who is missing in action and an invisible person. And I enjoy them, and I actually enjoy everybody that I met at the company, and they seem above board. And I don't want to go back to having, like, borrow money from my parents and stuff like that, because my dad has 12 kids, and believe me, he hears this all the time. So I just really don't want to have any options removed from my ability to keep myself afloat. Because every time something happens in my life, I need to have a way of covering myself, because the banks won't loan you money anymore, so I have to have other options.
Okay, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Any questions of this witness?
Thanks.
Okay, we're going to move along. Ms. Martin? Okay. Danny Register? Terry Fry? Also, welcome to the Minnesota Senate. And you may identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Terry Fry, and I'm from Blaine. I work at Target as a cashier, and as you know, that means I don't make a lot of money, and money is always tight. I'm a widow, and I'm raising a teenager, which is pretty difficult with my income. Senators, I don't have time in my day to come down here to St. Paul to ask you not to take away my financial rights. But I'm here because I have no alternative because the alternative is to do nothing. I've had to pawn stuff just to pay my bills in the past. And what that means, when I found Payday America, I found a better option because it's my money. What this bill seeks to regulate is the solution for many of us, not the problem. Here in Minnesota, we have stores with real people where we can go when we are short on the ability to make car payments or groceries. My biggest issue is groceries and gas. Gas is going up, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And there's also emergency expenses that you're not expecting, and you don't have the money to take care of it. And those people explained the fees to me. You know, I knew what I was getting into. I'm not an idiot. I make the choices based on what's available and what I can afford. So who are these organizations to tell a customer like me how often I can get short-term credit? What business is it of theirs? I don't understand why my business is any of their business. I mean, this is my money, and I should have control of that. I should not have someone regulating me. But I know things are different here at the Capitol, but in the real world, life happens. Will this political organization next seek to limit my credit card use for 4 times a year? I don't even have credit cards right now because of my situation. I had to file bankruptcy a couple of years ago. So I'm living on, very short terms. I even started donating blood plasma to get extra money for living expenses. And it seems sad to me that they would create a new class of victims by ignoring the consequences of these actions. Please don't listen to them. I have chosen not to use credit cards because the fees are too high and they are too tempting to use when I don't have the cash. I also don't like the prospect of bouncing a check, which I have done, and it's $35 every time that happens, and it just puts you further and further into debt. The fees at the banks are way too high, and they're even higher than a payday loan. If this bill passes, it does absolutely nothing to help me. In fact, it hurts me. It hurts thousands of people in my position. I wish the groups pushing this bill would spend half as much time focusing on ways to help people like me make more money than trying to take away the only good option I have to make ends meet. I really don't know what I'll do if you take away these options. I'm here today because the solutions some of us need for short-term financing already exist. If Payday America is gone, I really have no idea what I'll do. Please think about the consequences to me if you eliminate these good, safe options.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this witness?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Fry, for testifying today. Could I ask just how many payday loans you've taken out in the last year?
Well, I've taken out one, and then when I get paid, I pay them back, and it's like $25. So it's not an exorbitant interest rate that they're charging me. It's much cheaper than the $35 I get charged at the bank if I overdraft.
I don't
know what the interest rate works out to be, but I borrow $150 and I pay them $178.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, how many in the last year have you done?
How many have I repeated? When did I start? I'm trying to think. I'm thinking it's like four or five. And I pay them off every payday, and then I get money back for gas and groceries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wait a second. He might have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ma'am, just following up on Senator Dahl's question about, I'm trying to get a sense of sort of the flow throughout a year. So when you've needed to take one out and then you pay it off, about how long before you've had the circumstances where you wanted to take another one out?
Well, it pretty much happens every payday right now. I don't know how many more times I will have to do this till I can get my finances straightened out, but right now I really need them.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sherry Rasmussen, are you here? I'd like to visit with the Commerce Committee members. Welcome, Ms. Rasmussen, to the Minnesota Senate.
Hello. Thank you, Senator Metzen and members of the committee for letting me speak. My name is Sherry Rasmussen, and I'm from Wayzata, Minnesota. I just wanted to let you know that not all loan companies are the same. I have been scammed by loan companies. One in particular that was on the internet that I found, and they wanted to offer me twice as much money as what I should have been able to get, and they talked me into sending them $200 from Western Union, and which I did, thinking that I was going to get that money back, which I didn't. And there are a lot of, like, I know, like Fast Cash and some of these other places that are not legit. But I just want to thank God for Payday America, because actually it was my bank at Wells Fargo and somebody at my church that told me about Payday America, that they were a company that resides here, that they're an ethical company. They won't overcharge you for the amount that of money that you give. I'm on Social Security, but I'm an educated individual. I have my associate's degree, and I went to school for medical coding, so I'm not an idiot. But there are times when I need a short-term loan, and Payday America has always been very supportive. There's an extremely ethical company. I don't know what I would do without them. Like I said, I was scammed before, but I figure, like, if I were to overdraw for $2, I would get a $35 charge in my bank. Well, that's what I'm charged for my payday through Payday America. And I think, what about these credit companies and casinos? The casinos are making a lot more money off of people than Payday America. I mean, that would be an option for people that need money to go to the casinos and lose their whole paychecks. And so I really wish that you would consider this and not limit the amount of money that a person can get from Payday America. Like I said, they are regulated. They only allow you a certain amount of money that you are able to pay back.
Thank you very much. Heard the proponents and the opponents at length here, and we've had a very good discussion. we're ready for either a little wrap-up from you, Senator. Is there anybody else in the audience? I think we just want to be – I think we're pretty even on the time. Would you agree with that, Senator Hayden, on both
yes,
sides?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair, I would.
Okay, so we want to make sure that we're not erring on the one side or another. We always try to be, obviously, be fair, but Senator Kasoka, do you have an amendment? Or?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I started earlier about trying to work on both sides of this. I think both sides make a valid case. I have the A3 amendment, and I believe that Paul Cassidy can explain it, and with help maybe from counsel.
Mr. Chairman, just procedurally, the proponents of this amendment did come to me with a page and line amendment to the amendment we've already adopted, the A1, and it's just impossible for the committee to understand or engross that. So what I suggested be done is the page and line be engrossed into the amendment we've already adopted as a delete all amendment in and of itself so we can actually see what they're trying to do. And I think the cleanest way to go with this would be for the committee to recognize that this A3 was adopted, it basically supersede what's already been done in the A1 amendment. So I think that's cleanest, and I think the committee, it's the easiest way for people to understand what's being proposed here.
Okay, maybe it does mention 12 consumer short-term loans and some other things. Maybe, Mr. Cassidy, you could help the committee further understand the A3 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Kozalka, for introducing the amendment. Basically, this boils down Senator Hayden's bill to a couple of things. First of all, the underwriting criteria that we have to make, that we have to determine that they have the ability to repay the loan. It's something we already do, but now we will definitively say that in statute. In the previous bill, in Senator Hayden's bill, it says it uses the word make a, I believe, reasonable effort to determine whether they have the ability to pay. We think that's very subjective and is just going to lead to a lot of mischief in the future. Second, we remove the language regarding determining whether or not they're on fixed incomes. We believe that those folks should have access as well to short-term loan products if they need it. We also believe that it's in violation of federal law. I can produce for the committee federal code that would show that this would probably be discriminatory in violation of federal consumer lending codes. Finally, we take out a lot of the underwriting criteria that we feel is mostly subjective and really turns these into somewhat complicated loans that no longer become just simple unsecured loans. And then finally, we limit the number of loans to 12 loans per year, and we create a database, which is what the proponents of this legislation have proposed as well. We take out a word, though, that they used in the description of their database as a private database solution. I don't believe in this legislature, in the Minnesota legislature, we take databases lightly. We think the database issue should be vetted through the Commerce Department through some type of process and be developed and implemented through a formal process, formal bidding. I know that the proponents have highlighted one vendor, but we believe that more thought needs to go into how the database would be run. We're not opposed to the database and tracking how many loans are out there within the regulated loan industry. We just want some parameters put around it. And then finally, there are some subjective words used throughout the proposal before you now, such as the words device or subterfuge. Again, we're not sure what the proponents of the legislation are trying to get at with that, but in the end, what we're proposing is that we have an annual loan cap of 12 loans and that be supplanted with a database in order to track those 12 loans so that the regulated industry is held accountable for that.
So there will be a tracking device? Is that
right? Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Goodwin.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cassidy, it doesn't look like there's anything really in here that you aren't already doing. Is there?
Cassidy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, yes, two very important things. In Minnesota right now, there is no cap on the amount of loans that you can write to a consumer. Therein lies, I think, the primary issue that the proponents of this legislation are asking for. And number two, we have no device in Minnesota law to track those number. Even if you did have a cap, we don't have a mechanism in which to track those number of loans right now. So we think this gets to the heart of what they have been arguing with us about and have been proposing for the last 9 months.
So there's no limit now, but the proposal is 12. Is that correct? And as the bill calls for 5, do I understand?
Mr. Chairman, yes. If you look back at the research that has been done by Mr. Russi and Mr. Elwood through Department of Commerce records, you'll see that there are spikes way above 12 loans. And what we're saying is take this down to a reasonable amount. We think 4 is too low. We think 28 is too high. And so we think 12 is appropriate. And we think 12 because 12 months out of the year, once a month, folks might need an extension of credit.
Probably at Christmas time, too. Yeah. Senator Dames, excuse me, Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, so the 12, though, would be in perpetuity because the next 365 days you can get another 12, correct? So there really is no limit. You can get every paycheck, whether it's Social Security check or not, you could get another short-term loan, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, you are correct, but I'm basing my argument off of the statistics that are coming out of the Commerce Department, which are based on an annual basis. Those are reported number of loans, how many folks are taking out on an annual basis. So if the average, you know, we're throwing around numbers right now, but some folks say that the average right now is 10 loans per year. We see certain spikes in those statistics, you know, 18, 20, 24. I mean, we're taking this down to 12. So those folks can't do 24 repeat loans a year, the most egregious cases. So if we're trying to limit the damage, we're probably taking half of it out of the system. Although once they reach 12, we don't know where they're going to go.
Senator Kosoka. Excuse me. Senator Kosoka. Senator Goodwin.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Cassidy, you wouldn't need legislation to do that. You could do it yourself. The company could do it themselves. They could limit the number of loans. So really, that doesn't do a whole lot.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, of course we could self-regulate, but there's a very large industry in this state of a number of licensed vendors. I don't think whether or not we would all of our other folks in this industry would comply with that law as well. We would also wouldn't know how many of those, if you didn't have a database, how many loans folks were taking out in the end on an annual basis.
Yep, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
It seems like it would be pretty easy to figure out just by pulling up your one of your clients' names how many loans they had taken out that year. That's obvious. You would keep track of that.
I'm sure they could do that, Senator or Mr. Cassidy.
Just reduced his pay.
Thank you for continuing to call me, Senator.
You went from big pay to little pay there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, the problem, at least that I believe the proponents believe, is that even if we did self-police ourselves and a customer came in and took out 12 loans, they still can go across the street to Mr. Tapper's office and take out 12 more. Then they can go down the road to another payday lender who I don't even know who it would be, Ace, for instance, and take out another 12. So unless you have a standardized uniform system central that everybody can watch so that my client knows. It really is de facto underwriting. I mean, if we see that 6 loans have been taken out in the last 8 weeks across the street at Ace Cash, for our managers, that's going to be a flag right there. But once they hit 12, that means they got to stop. Point is that it's going to make you think twice about your underwriting criteria when you see that someone has done 8 across the street and now they're coming to see you.
Okay. Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for both Senator Hayden and for Mr. Cassidy. What I'm
getting the picture of here is that there's the sequence of loans where loan number two is taken out to pay off loan number one, three is taken off to pay number two, and 12 is taken out to pay number 11. Do you have any kind of policy on making sure that there's a gap between them so that the person is not just growing their debt continuously? And then I think you already mentioned it just in brief that after the 12th loan, they would have to go somewhere else. And I guess that's the same question I'd ask for from Senator Hayden. Do you have a gap that you want to institute there? And what happens after that fifth loan?
Mr.
Hayden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson. I'm going to just kind of take a little bit of a crack at it, but also have Mr. Ruscha talk about it because he's has immersed himself in the data a little bit more than I have. But I think you're starting to kind of hit the nail on the head, and some of our testifiers on both sides, regardless if they wanted or felt like they were in a trap, I think you're seeing this continuous scenario in which people are using that they can't get out or that they need it, depending on your perspective, but you're kind of sequencing these loans. And so I think as part of the negotiations and to try to provide some flexibility, we wanted to kind of come with this cap without being prescriptive. I had a conversation with Senator Reiner today about kind of a timeout between and trying to figure that out. And I think that, we're always open to have those conversations in a way to which to stop that. But in the interest of trying to move forward and trying to have some flexibility for the lenders and that people that need them is to give them some sort of cap. If maybe they get in a bad spot, they need 2-3 in a row, as Mr. Chair said, Christmas time or something, so that we're not necessarily over-prescribing that, but we are saying that we don't want you to get into, and it gets a little tricky and people have their own rights and responsibilities, but we do think that at some point people get into these traps, and you've heard them before. People are on, disability and other things, and they're in a tough spot, and they end up to a point in which they just can't kind of get out of it. And I think that was what our intention was here, as we, and I hope that as we move forward. By the way, I'm not sure that I would be willing to accept this amendment, but as we move forward at the committee's pleasure, we're not going to stop talking to find some balance. But today we think that this provision that we brought forth starts to get at this issue of the debt trap. Mr. Ruscha, I don't know if you...
Sure. Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the issue of 12, of course, you heard testimony from Sherry earlier, who was borrowing off her Social Security disability check, which is a monthly check. This does nothing for her in terms of getting her out of the trap. This is just, the whole year. And then the whole next, as Senator Dahl pointed out. As far as underwriting, our bill, Mr. Cassidy says it's subjective, but I think it gives the industry discretion. All we ask is that you look at expenses. I think all of their proposals are based on just looking at income, percentages of income. Expenses are important. We think the industry should look at expenses and retain the discretion then. So we're not being overly prescriptive, which I think is the last thing I want to say about the way the loan cap works. I can imagine, I love your example about Christmas bills coming due maybe in January, and you're getting a tax refund because you're doing your taxes and you've got a refund coming. It's one of the kind of forced savings income jumps that a lot of people have. I can imagine somebody taking two payday loans consecutively to bridge to their tax refund. So the cap on the number of loans is important because it talks about the days in a year that you're in debt. I don't know if we want to be in the business of saying we only dislike them when they're consecutive or we only dislike them when they're, kind of paced out. What bothers us is the amount of time that these interest rates then have an effect on your budget, if that helps, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Senator Pratt, did you have a
question? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ruscha, to that point, something along the lines of number of days in indebtedness versus number of loans might might be a better option. But I wanted to get back to the rationale behind calling out certain types of income. Senator Hayden, you brought that up as we were talking about it, because I do have a concern that that does violate the Equal Credit Opportunity Act. And can you talk to that?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Pratt, we'd be happy to work on language there. I want you to know what the concept is that we're trying to get at. In our interviews and focus groups and surveys, we have found a surprising number of people that are in the trap that are on fixed incomes. And it seems to me like the only time a payday loan really makes sense is if you know you're going to have enhanced income sometime in the foreseeable future, or you know you're going to have a dip in expenses, and then you can pay off the loan, brush your hands, be done. What I think is important about this whole thing is that, if you use them, you know, on a regular basis, then you're in the trap and it's more difficult to get out, if that makes sense.
So, Brett, did you follow up?
It does. It's just that the ECOA is very clear that you can't discount that income. You can't treat it any differently.
Oh.
All you can do,
sure,
is assess the probability of continuance.
I'm sorry,
and
Mr.
And it calls out specifically retirement, public assistance,
sure,
et cetera.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt. It still puts the discretion with the lender. We're just asking for some reporting data. And we could work on language something like, you know, is the customer on a fixed income as evidenced by these things? They don't have to get proof. We're not looking for that. We just want to know going forward, what percentage of the customer base is on fixed income like this? I think we would all want to know, just in terms of who is affected and who's getting into the trap. What percentage of it is our folks? This is an ancillary issue that we discovered on this journey of ours. It's not, I mean, we're willing to let it go and maybe, you know, talk further at another time. But, you know, we're just looking for a sense of what's going on in the customer base with fixed incomes.
Any further questions? Senator Reinhart, did you have a...
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, for Senator Hayden, on the A3, I mean, it seems to me like it keeps most of the important provisions you're trying to work for. But, and I mean, totally transparent here, but I feel like it is more understandable. I mean, it doesn't have the language around the cumulative days of indebtedness, but I'm wondering about your feelings on the A3, if that's, I think it needs some improving, Senator Gazelka, but if it's something you are not considering at all. I'd appreciate to know that. And then, Mr. Resch, I have a question for you as well.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Reinhart. I think that, there's some work that we can do. I think Senator Pratt clearly is an expert in some of the stuff on I wrote it down, the Equal Credit and Opportunity Act.
He's a banker.
I'm going to find that out.
Oh, that's that good.
He's an expert at this stuff. I will certainly think there's some things that we could work. I think the meat of this is the 12 consumer loans. I think Senator Dow clearly carried this before, kind of outlined the issues there and some of our testifiers. If there is some language that needs to get cleared up with this, but I do think that talking about these underwriting criteria, but in particular this issue about how many times, is, I think, has also, frankly, when I've talked to Mr. Cassidy a lot, has been kind of the stickling point. Where is, and I talked to you, where is the balance? That's what we're wrestling with today. And I just think that 12, based on the information that I've seen and people that I talk to, is really getting people spinning and cycling. We don't want to be overly prescriptive on the time, because people, I think Mr. Roche has given a good idea of this Christmas and how it works out until the spring. Mm-hmm. So we don't necessarily want to get into that, but we think that 12 keeps people in the cycle, and that essentially doesn't. And I think Senator Goodwin has kind of laid that out a little bit, that doesn't really get us where our intention of the bill, where we want it to go. So I would respectfully, and thank you, Senator Gazelka, for bringing it, because I know you've been working on this as well, but I just don't think this is kind of where we want to go yet.
Thank you.
Well, let me just repeat what I said about an hour and a half ago, that or whatever, 2 hours ago, that this has really been work in progress. I know I met, I think, Cassidy and Mr. Roche that, 2.5-3 hours yesterday? You were in my office or something like that, quite a while, and I know the author has been working, and Kasoka, and so this has been going on for quite a while, so there's been a lot of effort. We've got a compromise if we can in this, where we're at, but hours and
thank you, a follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, and Mr. Chair, you're very good at guiding us in that direction, and I think, you know, maybe it's not even compromise. Sometimes compromise has this connotation that everybody loses, but I think this committee, more so than any I serve on, really works hard to try and find the right spot.
Right spot.
In terms of having a balance between the market and consumer protection, and, you know, and I'll share with the public, it's one of the, I think it's the most enjoyable committee where R's and D's don't matter. I mean, we work together on trying to find that right balance. So, Senator Hayden, thank you. I appreciate that. And I will say 5 is too low and 12 is too high. So I'm trying to figure out where that right balance is. And I want to pick up something that Senator Carlson said earlier. In this issue, what I am most concerned about is the cyclical nature and the idea of breaking that cycle. And I had staff do some work on this in real time. And, Mr. Resha, you can correct me if your understanding is differently, but of the 27 states or, 54% have a permissive, totally permissive environment. We have 15 states or 30% that ban, and we have 9 states, including not including us at this point, that have this hybrid, or about 18%. Now, of those 9, only 2 say a number. Washington says 8, and Delaware says 5. The others talk about period and time off. And I think that's the right approach, and that's a conversation I had with Senator Hayden and I've had with some other folks. But what I heard in testimony was not support for that. And I would mention the FDIC strongly recommended a cooling off period. And so, you know, honestly, members, I would like to see a combination of a cap with some time off in between so that the option is out there. The lenders can make this, but you know, but we break this cycle of people using one to pay off another. But it's still out there for people like some of our testifiers, and frankly, like the woman and we heard from a fellow Duluthian, but we also had a fair and balanced article in the newspaper in Duluth last week that cited someone who said these are something she really counts on, and that she doesn't have a regular job and it can get difficult, and she knows that this is an avenue. So as I've shared with everybody, you know, I'm interested in seeing this be an option for those that need it, but I am interested in the consumer protection aspect of it. So that's my very long way of asking, you know, talk to me a little bit about opposition to some sort of a cooling off period or resting period.
So, well, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Reiner, for those very thoughtful comments. Just talking to Mr. Roche, I mean, I don't think that we're actually opposed to a cooling off period. We just, in the spirit of trying to give consumers more option and opportunities when they, you know, and I want to be very careful here. People have crisis at unpredictable times, but often it is kind of a situation. I think we all, most of us could probably remember where we get into a kind of a cycle where things have gotten really tough for us. And if we could kind of work our way through it, then we kind of go back. So if a cooling off period of, say, you know, you do 4 consecutive and then you got to cool off for an extended amount of time and then pick up 6, 7 and then cap it at 8 or, you know, I don't know. This is on a little bit on the fly, so I'm a little nervous here.
I've never seen
everybody.
I've
you
never,
know, the worst,
you've never been nervous. Ever. I've known you.
The worst thing in politics when everybody stops liking you, right? Both sides. But that might be the way through. I mean, I think that that is something that is reasonable. You know, I haven't, in all fairness, haven't had that conversation with either of the principal folks that were kind of bringing this together. But I think that if folks are amenable to that, that's something there. I just want to make sure that we're not taking away the opportunity when people kind of get into a tight spot. We just don't want that tight spot to be in perpetuity.
And Mr. Chair, before Mr. Cassie, a small follow-up, and then I'll relinquish the floor. And that's my concern. And it's the concern Senator Carlson highlighted earlier, that we allow people to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever the magic number is, consecutively, and then there's a cliff. And then what happens? And I don't feel like that really is something the lenders should – I mean, that's not their business. There are others, and like the great LSS folks that have been here to help in that situation. But I think we can find a balance here that doesn't bring people to a cliff. So,
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Cassidy first.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Reiner, thank you for your comments. Some of the concepts that we have talked about, now this is in a much larger context of bigger proposals, but are some better characterized as an off-ramp for folks. One of them that was talked about was an off-ramp after 12 loans where folks go into an installment plan because obviously they're at the end of their cap. We've also talked about a voluntary off-ramp where anytime during a 12-month period folks can decide that they would like to go on an installment plan, they'd go into a 6-month, 12-payment installment plan. Obviously, these have to be affordable for us as well in the context of what the business financial model looks like. But those are discussions that we've been more than happy to have with the proponents of this legislation.
We'll help you a lot. See what he wants. Senator, Mr. Roche, did you wish to?
No, I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
And I'd kind of feel a little vibe here about maybe it's just me listening, but like there's a number 8 kind of coming out in my mind, and I don't know if that would get us out of this jam or now it's unlimited, you know.
I would accept that.
Which is too much, I kind of feel, and so I just kind of trying to work this thing out and get Mr. Hayden's bill moving, and well, that's just a comment from the chair. And
well, Mr. Chair, I know that we're wrestling over this, and there's still, this committee obviously is well versed in financial matters, so I think that there's some things that we might be able to continue to talk about. But in the spirit of trying to continue to move this forward, if the 8 is the pleasure of the committee, I think that would be something that, you know, I'd be willing, or we'd be willing to, you know, accept, you know, not very reluctantly, and still looking for maybe something that has a little sweeter spot, getting towards the things that Senator Reinert, Senator Carlson. I just think that the only issue is that we just need to really get the parties to print the folks together with yourself, if you like, and start talking about that. Have the Department of Commerce come in and take a look at some of the guidance that we've gotten from the federal government on this. And I don't know if today, at this moment, we know all of the consequences, our unintended consequences of it. But if 8 as a cap helps us to move forward, I think that that's something that we'd be willing to accept, at least for now.
Well, again, I appreciate you're willing to continue the discussion. We like to do what we can in this committee, but you know, Senator Reinert, I think brings up a good point. So, with your commitment that you work with the concerned senators, I'm willing to probably move this out. And and I, if we get a kind of an agreement with all the folks, I know Senator,
I would,
been involved, all the way, and
offer that
Senator Reinert, you've been there, and Senator Dahl and others, and so I.
Mr. Chair, and I hope that's on the Mr. Senator Hayden's bill and not the amendment.
Yeah.
I think we vote to defeat the amendment, but then have the. I would like to see the rest of that the bill intact, actually.
Well,
Mr. Chair,
we have to act. I believe we're going to act on the Kosaka amendment, I believe.
Yeah, with the 8, I will.
Yeah.
include that in my amendment.
That's the discussion right now. Senator Letts first.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the I appreciate the spirit of working on this, but Senator Gazelka's amendment does a lot more than just change the number. If you look at the A1 amendment, line 2.9, there's the restriction on loans if the consumer's short-term loan debt is more than 90 days. Okay, so there's the cut off the debt trap, that 90 days provision, which is absent from Senator Gazelka's amendment. And there's some other provisions later on that page that fill in that information with essentially some data gathering to make sure that that is adhered to. And then if you go back on the first page of Senator Hayden's amendment, there's getting into the debt obligations or the expenses, as Mr. Rushi referred to. There's probably a little more of a point there than just some data gathering so we can kind of keep track of who's doing this. But I think it's an underwriting process to some degree anyway. Even if it's a limited degree, there's a certain amount of underwriting that's required by Senator Hayden's bill, which I think is appropriate, so that they're not simply saying, okay, I come in, I make $10,000 a year. Well, okay, that's fine. We'll give you the loan. They do. Well, that's not... wouldn't be smart business necessarily, but that apparently is the business model because they find they've been able to recapture the money. But if there's some obligation, say, well, okay, you make $10,000 a year, but you got $12,000 a year in expenses, I think it's important for us to say it's against public policy for us to encourage that kind of conduct, and there at least ought to be that information gathered so that the lending firm can assess that. And that's where I think Senator Hayden's bill is more robust, and I would hate to see all of that just dropped. And then there's one other point on line 28 of the A1 amendment. It refers to reasonable ability to repay. And you'll note on line 28 of the A3 amendment, the term reasonable has been deleted. So there's not even a standard of reasonableness applied to the ability to repay in Senator Gazelka's amendment. Now, I'd rather see some kind of cap on interest. I like the idea of looking at some kind of off-ramp or, gap in there. But I think Senator Gazelka's bill, frankly, probably does more harm than good, even if you drop it down from 12 to 8, because it drops so many other criteria off the table, it doesn't really advance the ball much at all. So I'd encourage the committee to reject the A3 amendment and make amend the A1. To 8, and then move that forward.
Mr. Chair, just to comment to that, it also drops the whole section that Senator Pratt brought up that probably isn't even legal, which they acknowledge may not be legal, and so I'd rather have a clean bill that addresses the main things that we're trying to get at.
I'm sorry, which section was that? Is that the reporting? Which section was Senator Pratt's?
The income.
I give here is too. The 2.4 is a. I take it as a somewhat of a compromise too by the opponents, the Consumer Reporting Service, where you have to identify how many are out there, and then you can't do more than that because it's reported. And then I think there's a give there on the 12 to 8, but there are some positive things there too, Senator Letts, I believe that. But anyway,
Mr. Chair, I would agree.
Yeah.
There's some positive things in there. But to move forward on a skeleton rather than on a full body that needs to be trimmed a bit, I think would be the wrong way to go.
A skeleton crew here today. Well, except for the... excuse me. I didn't say anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for good to be feel good in your committee. I would just say, and I know Senator Reinert wanted to get in, but I think that Senator Latch makes a good point. This is really a good faith effort on behalf of either earlier versions, and our thoughts were even less than what we came in with on the original bill. I think that to Senator Pratt's point, I think that there's a conversation that needs to be had with Senator Pratt or others that really understand that provision of federal law, and I think we can have that conversation and get to that. But I wouldn't want to kind of start to you know, gut our bill in order to get this smaller bill. I'd rather start a little more robust with the compromise that we have, continue on with our conversations, get a clean, some clean amendments as this move forward. But we really think, you know, once again, but you know, I won't reiterate Senator Latz's argument, but I think he made it quite eloquently, and I concur with him. I would ask us to vote down.
Senator Gazelle. Again, I repeat, normally we want to do 97 or 100% of the work here, but I think we're kind of stuck here for a little bit, and I'm 100% sure this is going to be going to conference committee, too. So I'm just thinking that. I don't know if that's true, but so I think we do have a little some consensus. We're going to, again, I like to do the work here, but there's a little some window here that but to keep her going, I don't think we should kill the legislation today, but I think what really on Senator Reinhart, and then we're going to vote on Yasoka amendment. Senator Reinhart, did you have a?
Yeah, well, Mr. Chair, I have an amendment too. I'm not clear whether it seems like the A3 is going to be supported or not. But if it is, I would like to add some language around the resting period or cooling off period idea as recommended by the FDIC. So. Members, it's a little bit of a lengthy oral amendment, so I had some copies made, and I can get those passed out.
Senator Pratt, but
just to fill some time while Senator Reinhart.
We're not going to fill a lot of time here. So,
well, now let Senator Reinhart go.
I know I've got two committee meetings going in other rooms, and have been going
so,
since.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I would move to amend the A3 amendment by inserting in Section 2, and if someone could get this to Senator Hayden right away.
Thank you.
A new subdivision D, and then obviously the other subdivisions would be renumbered appropriately. And basically what the language says for those in the audience, it says a consumer short-term lender may not make a consumer short-term loan to a borrower if there has been less than 45 days since the borrower has paid in full any previous short-term loan. So it's the resting period or cooling off period that we're talking about. And the idea is that you can, they're still out there. You can make up to 8, but there's some time in between for folks to get out of a cycle of using potentially one to pay off the other. So that's my amendment to the amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Reinhart, I like the idea. I just like it much better attached to the A1 amendment. As opposed to the A3. It's just, you know, our preference. I think, once again, Senator Latz and others have made a really good argument for me around why we should stick with the A1, continue to work. But I do like your language.
Okay, so you're not going to do it right now?
No, I would like to amend the A3 in case that's the one that the committee supports. And if it doesn't, then I'll figure out how to amend the A1. Mr. Chair, the A1's not quite as easy to put that language into, but
okay. You're going to move to amend the A3 amendment.
A3.
Okay, you've heard Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to agree with Senator Reinhart. I believe that his change fits better in the A3 amendment. I'm going to have a real concern voting in favor of a bill that I believe has some serious concerns with federal regulations, which I think are cleaned up in A3 and becomes a better vehicle, Senator Latz, to talk about the concerns and issues that you have that are maybe missing out of the A1. So I support Senator Reinhart and Senator Gazelka.
Mr. Cassidy, we'll give you about 30 seconds on this Senator Reinhart's amendment.
Mr. Chairman, members, no, I am not crazy about this amendment, but I would be more than happy to talk to Senator Reinhart about a cooling off period. Obviously, other states have them. 45 days, I think, ties consumers' hands. When you look at, I really don't look at it much differently than the 90 days of indebtedness threshold that the proponents have in their original bill. But am I happy to have that conversation about cooling off periods? Yes. Do I think a 45-day one here in the middle of a committee trying to wrap up in the next few minutes is a good idea? No. But I'd be more than happy to have that discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Are you going to pursue the amendment right now,
mm-hmm.
Senator Reinhart? Okay. On Reinhardt Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
No. Motion does prevail. Now we're on the Kasalka A3 Amendment as amended by Senator Reinhardt. I think we know what it does. Further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Show of hands. All those in favor of the Kasalka motion, raise your hand. Eight. Opposed. Two, three, four, five. Four, five. I think it's eight in favor and five opposed. Is that correct? The motion does prevail. Thank you for all your hard work. And where does the bill go? We have to pass the bill.
Can you get the vote for the liquor bill real quick?
Okay. I need a motion to move Senate File 2368 as amended.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Letts.
Did we change the number 12 to number 8 on the 8th?
Yes, yes. We made that orally.
That was incorporated. Yes. All right, thank you.
Okay, Senator Ryder moves that. Is it Senate File 2368 as amended be recommended to pass? Further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I guess we have to back up for a second to the liquor bill. What's the.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Somebody brought to my attention that they didn't think we actually adopted the delete all amendment before we moved the bill out. So if we could just quickly go back to the liquor bill and maybe somebody could move the A1, the 2346A1 delete all amendment.
Senator Reinhardt moves that. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Anything else?
And if Senator Pappas could again move the amendment, the A2 amendment that she offered to the delete all.
I'll move the A2 amendment.
Okay, on that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Somebody could move the bill to the tax committee.
Now we got
to
do, I guess, move the tax.
I'll move it. Bill,
Senator Zalka moves the tax committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Five by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion and revote on the prevails. Committee's adjourned.
Got it. Earlier.
Committee's adjourned. Thanks, everybody, for all your hard work on this.